friends. Great to have everybody here on the National Deer Association's Coffee and Deer Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nick Pinizzotto, joined by the doctor, Mr. Mike Grohman. Today, we're going to be talking with members of our own NDA grassroots team. They're going to be talking about becoming an NDA volunteer, joining or starting a branch, and everything in between. And so joining us today will be Matt Wilkins. He's our Director of Grassroots Support and also our South Region Regional Director. Jason Meekoff, who is our Midwest Regional Director, and Megan Postal, our Northeast Regional Director. And Megan is actually a repeat guest on the show. We had her on back, I think, in the earlier days of the Coffee and Deer Podcast. And geez, we liked her so much we hired her. So see, this is what can happen, Mike. Whenever we have guests on the show, you could become an NDA employee.
See, every time I'm on, I'm worried about that I might get fired. So I guess it's good that you can get hired.
Well, we can't cut your pay any further than we already have. So
I know.
Fired is the next step. Mike, you and I haven't talked turkey yet, but man, it's time, because by the time our listeners hear this, I've already completed my first hunt in Delaware. I'll be hunting out there with Ron Hawes, friend of the show. And so looking forward to doing that. And this year, Mike, we don't have the governor along. As you've heard from previous shows, we've helped the governor shoot a couple turkeys out there, Governor John Carney, but he has another commitment. So it's just Ron and I having all the fun to ourselves.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, when you're out there hunting, you're calling for someone that is, air quotes, you know, pretty important, you know, it puts a lot of stress on you. And I just like the enjoyment of being out anyways. And if there's a day that I just don't feel like pushing myself too hard, I don't have to, because there's no pressure on you. So nothing wrong with that.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, the whole, you know, deciding not to push as hard as you want to, that those days seem to be more and more for us, I think, these days. So I totally get what you're saying there.
Well, I went after it pretty hard last year. I mean, I'm getting, because of the job change, I have more free time to turkey hunt than I do to deer hunt. So I really went after it all in last year and had a great time.
Well, this year we're going to make sure we get a bird. So we'll put in an extra effort. We'll have to set our plans. Speaking of which, Pennsylvania and New York seasons don't start until later. We're not until the first week of May here. When does it start there, Mike?
May 1st. New York, because we have Sunday hunting, they just rotate it, and it's always on May 1st. And even if May 1st falls on a Sunday, that's our first day.
You had to go ahead and rub in that Sunday hunting thing. I appreciate that. But yeah, so you actually start before us, and then we open here. It'd be the first Saturday in May. And I texted you this morning, Mike. I don't know if you saw it. You had a picture of these two nice strutters that I had surrounding a single hen. And so there's lots of turkey activity happening already. So it's kind of giving me an itchy trigger finger.
I did see that. And it is a really cool photo. You should put that up.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I don't know, we'll ask our guests this here in a second, but I used to get my calls out and practice like well in advance of the season, weeks before, and get all prepared. And I have to be honest, now, literally on my drive to Delaware will be the first time I touch my calls and put them in my mouth, and I'll practice on that 5-hour drive. I have learned, let's put it this way. I used to be, as an early turkey hunter, I was so focused on, it comes down to the calling. You got to be a great caller. And now I've learned, I think, that it's more about you got to be where the turkeys want to be. And if at least you understand turkey behavior and you're a decent caller, you're probably going to kill that bird. And I've killed a lot of birds that way, and not believing that I'm the world's greatest caller. So I don't know, are you still practicing well in advance, or are you just kind of dusting stuff off the day before?
Well, before I, you know, say anything else, if there are true turkey hunters on this podcast listening, you're going to get hate mail. Because that debate between woodsmanship and calling is a really hot topic that really raises some hackles. So I like to be as neutral as I can, but for me, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, there's times where, yes, if you do a good job scouting and you know where the turkeys want to be, it's going to get you in the game. But then there's times where that calling and knowing what to say and how to say it and when to say it might help them close that distance to put them into shotgun range. So me, it's a little bit of both. And am I practicing yet? I am. And this year I'm trying to find new mouth calls. So I just ordered from two separate companies some different mouth calls that I'm going to start to work with, because I need somebody, because I had someone making me custom calls for years and they don't do it anymore, and I'm down to my last one, and so that's really gonna hurt me if I, blow that call out. So I'm trying to replace it. So I'm actually doing some testing right now. So I'm in the heat of battle to get ready to get my calls ready to go that are gonna be my number one, number two, and number three for the season.
And I think you're totally right. It is a mix of both that matters. Whenever I said about understanding where the turkeys want to be and being there, all of our guests were nodding their head like, yes. And so we'll give them a chance to talk about that. But I've certainly had success both ways, some where you have to coax them in and others where I think just being in the right place. So I think that's a good point. And I got to tell you, just to get prepared, I slow cooked some turkey legs yesterday. Too many people, I think, don't keep their turkey legs because the last thing you want to do with a wild turkey is like cook it up like you would a non-wild turkey and bite into the drumstick. That ain't going to go well for you. But I slow cook them in a couple different ways. One way is in a slow cooker, but that's going to take you about 8 hours. But you can also boil them for about 3 hours, and that meat will just peel out of there, and it makes really great what you would think of as a pulled pork sandwich. Well, I like to do that with turkey legs. Have you ever done that? Do you eat your turkey legs?
I do, and I do slow cook them for a long period of time, and we just do it in a lot of Italian seasoning. So actually, like extra virgin olive oil, and then Italian seasonings, and we cook them down that way. And then my wife makes a pasta, like an antipasto type of pasta that goes along with it. And the kids have always that's always been one of their favorite meals.
And so it's interesting. I know all of our guests here are turkey hunters, so I'll give you all a chance to actually say something here at this point. Have any of you been out? Now, Wilkins, I know you're down in Alabama. Have any of you been out, or are you at least excited to get out?
Yes, so down here in Southeast Alabama, we started with youth season on the 23rd and 24th, and then regular season opened up March 25th. So we've been at it for a little bit down south. I have got to watch a few turkeys flop, and I've had some successful hunts, and I too save legs. So slow cooking to make turkey tacos is a really
Oh.
good way to take care of those legs. But yeah, we've had a heck of a season to start with. Especially in the Southeast, weather plays a big deal in, turkey's temperament. But pushing season back seems to have helped. We've worked some birds, had some really great hunts. Last Sunday for Easter morning, had a heck of a hunt where I got to take a bird. And then to start the season off, my daughter killed her first one. So I don't think my season can get any better. But yeah, we're excited to see it keep going and see where turkeys can take you. That's one cool thing about turkeys is you can travel and hunt them, and you don't have to stay at home.
Yeah, that's a good point. When I shot my first Osceola, I remember I think I shot that thing in March because the season opened early there in Florida. And back in the day, did go around to different places in the country to shoot them. I haven't done that recently, but yeah, I guess your season can start as early as you want it to. Megan and Jason, you're both in the north, so I'm assuming, I know Megan, you're in New York, so you're going to start on May 1st. But Jason, when do things open up there in Michigan?
Can't open up here. The first season here, Michigan's got a funky set of seasons, the way it is, gotta apply for things. But first season here's the 20th. I was looking at my schedule the other day, and I'll be hunting like Memorial Day weekend in the Upper Peninsula because that's a fun trip. And but other than that, there's like one weekend where I'm not calling birds for somebody or traveling. I'll actually be out by you in PA this year, hunting out there with a buddy that lives out there.
Well, you'll have to let us know when you're over this way. We'll have to catch up with you. And Megan, I know you've been doing some fly fishing because I've been seeing your Instagram posts, but are you excited for turkey hunting?
I am. So I am a very new turkey hunter. I have yet to fill a tag. So this is my year we're hoping for. So I'm super excited for this May. So yes, I am.
Well, that would be awesome. Yeah, so we're hoping for your success there. If I'd have known that, I would have invited you to Delaware. And we could, instead of calling a bird for the governor, we could have called you in your first one.
Next time.
All right, we'll do that next time. And speaking of fly fishing, Mike, I got breaking news. I got a new fly rod yesterday. So I've been getting into the Euro nymphing thing, which is a really cool way to catch fish. And once you figure it out, it's actually I feel like it's more effective, but I never had a Euro nymphing rod, and I've been trying to do it with like my 9 foot three weight rod, which is, you would think, okay, well, 9 feet is plenty, but actually longer is better. So I went with a 10 foot 6 inch three weight, and I'm trying, I don't know if you've heard of these, but I've been wanting to try one of these moonshine rod company rods. They're really pretty, and they're supposed to be pretty good bang for your buck. So have you ever heard of those?
I have not, but I've been away from fly fishing for like a, you know, seriously for like a decade now. I just grab my stuff that I've had for years and fish. You know, you and I went out a couple times, but I just haven't had the time. So yeah, I'm kind of out of the circles. So is that a newer company?
Less than 10 years, I think, if I had to guess, but, yeah. So yeah, actually the last time you and I went fly fishing, you texted me a picture. We were separated on a stream and you caught a freaking pike. So I remember that. Not typically something you get on the fly in a small stream in Pennsylvania, but it is what it is. And so anyway, yeah, the Euro nymphing thing is a real thing, and your flies are typically different than Megan. I don't know. Have you ever tried Euro nymphing?
I tried a little bit. I haven't dabbled a whole lot, but from what I've tried from other people's equipment, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just a different way to do things. So anyway, since we can't turkey hunt here until May, you got to get in some fly fishing when it's not flooded. Also, we've had 3 or 4 straight days of rain here, 5 inches of rain where I live in Western Pennsylvania already in April. And we're typically supposed to get less than 3 inches for the whole month. So the trout opener is actually on Saturday, but unless you've got 5 foot sinkers, you're not going to get your bait down to where the fish are. Anyway, fishing, turkey hunting aside, let's talk about becoming a volunteer or a branch member with the National Deer Association. I will say that my original interaction with then the Quality Deer Management Association was as a volunteer and as a branch member. I remember making phone calls to try to fill up a banquet hall for an event that we had, and I never would have guessed then how things would have changed and where I'd be now with the NDA. So it's just funny how that works. And so today, though, we're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be talking about it with our resident experts. And let's go ahead and formally introduce our guest today, Matt Wilkins. As I mentioned, he's the director of our grassroots support, and also our South RD, Jason Meekoff, our Midwest RD, and Megan Postal in the Northeast. So, Matt, if you don't mind, go ahead and we'll start with you. Tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, Matt Wilkins, Director of Grassroots Support and the Regional Director for the South for the National Deer Association. I, like I said earlier, live in Southeast Alabama. If you go to the bottom corner of Alabama, that's where you can find me. I'm about 90 miles north of Panama City Beach and about 10 to 15 miles west of Georgia. So I'm right there in that bottom corner. Lifelong outdoorsman, and glad to be here today.
All right, Jason, how about you?
Yeah, Jason Meekoff, Midwest Regional Director. Live in Metro Detroit. Grew up in a super small town in northern Michigan. Started with the NDA last June. Doing this. Been involved in the conservation nonprofit space for the better part of a decade. And spend my time in the woods most of the time. Spent the last month or so driving around finding all the turkeys in my area.
Awesome. So you'll be well prepared. All right, Megan, your turn.
Hi, I am Megan Postal, Northeast Regional Director here. I am from upstate New York, right underneath the Adirondack Mountains. I like to deer hunt and I like to fly fish, and I am a mom of a 5-year-old girl, and I stay very busy.
Yeah, you definitely do. Anyone that follows Megan's social media knows that she's always doing something. Actually, I'm jealous half the time. I see all the stuff you're into. So welcome to all of you. I appreciate you all taking the time to be on the show. And we're going to talk about a pretty important topic, certainly important to deer and important to the National Deer Association. And so I'm just going to start it off with this. I'm going to have Matt, if you would, just give us just a general idea of what the grassroots program is. And then we'll take it from there.
All right. Our grassroots program is our volunteer base. That's the best way to put it. Grassroots are our local, made up of our local branches, our state leadership from volunteers, and our volunteer leadership. Our grassroots department, our grassroots part of our organization, is responsible for local involvement. So you've got your people from the communities that are in there and that keep us, they help keep us abreast of what's going on, not only in their state, but also in their local communities. They help us with fundraising. They help us with mission delivery. They are our volunteers and in the lifeblood of our organization. You know, we are a grassroots organization, so it does take volunteers and local leaders to help us continue the mission of NDA.
So let's do this. So let's say I'm someone that's listening to this and I'm thinking, you know what, I want to get more involved. What's the first step to doing that? And I'll just open it up to any of you who want to jump in, or you can all even give your perspective on that.
I think the first thing is that you reach out to us at NDA. We've got to find a local branch, and we're fixing to make a little bit of changes there to become a volunteer. That's the easiest way, is to go to our website. And then from there, we will put you in touch with somebody either locally or on the state level that's in your area. We'll also be there with you to help make sure that that we get you plugged into the right branch if we've got multiple branches. And then also, we're going to ask you some questions. What do you want to get involved with? Is your passion policy? Is your passion field to fork? Is your passion our public lands work? We'll go through the list with you. And then, like I said, get you plugged into to the right branch. That way we've got a good fit.
Let me do it this way. So I'll have you each sort of describe the regions you're in, because when we say we're going to connect you with somebody, it's going to be your regional director. And so, Megan, let's start with you. Talk about your region. And if you're in this region, Megan's the person to talk to.
So as the Northeast Regional Director, my territory covers Maine all the way over to Ohio, down to Virginia, and all the states in between. So if you're located within the Northeast region, that would be me as your point person. There's a lot of active branches in my region doing really cool things. So if you're interested, just get a hold of me and I can connect you with the right people.
Perfect. How about you, Jason?
Yeah, I cover what we have as the Midwest. I cover everything from Michigan to Texas north, sort of on a diagonal. It's like 16 states. If anybody's in there, reach out to me. It's jason@deerassociation.com.
All right, Matt, your region.
I've got the Southeast. So if you look at Southeast, almost SEC football, that's the region I've got, with the exception of now it's Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri, but I've got from Louisiana, Arkansas, across to South and North Carolina, and then everything south of that. So if you're in the Southeast and want to get involved, or you just want to get involved, period, you can reach out to me, and it's pretty simple, mwilkins@deerassociation.com.
Yeah, and if you go to our website and look up our regional directors or our grassroots program, or become a volunteer, you will see the regions, and they are big. And I think longer term, we want to, obviously it'd be nice to have 10 RDs on this call that cover smaller areas. But for the meantime, while we sort of rebuild this program, the folks here are covering some very, very large areas. So let me ask this question: why the branches exist, and why are volunteers important? And Jason, we'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, it is called the grassroots department for a reason. It's the roots feed the entire organism, which is NDA. And if you want to be involved with policy and advocacy, or on the ground habitat work, and you care about deer and deer hunting in your region and nationally, that's why you would want to volunteer. So you can affect change both locally and nationally by being a member of the organization and being a volunteer. And that's why I have volunteered for things. That's why I've been a member of NDA for, a long time, since before I worked here, obviously. And, being able to affect the thing you care about both regionally and nationally is very important.
Being a volunteer at one time, it is very important. And I know my mindset at the time was I just wanted to give back and be part of it in a bigger way. And even the doctor here, he is also a NDA volunteer and a member of the West Central Pennsylvania branch, as am I. And so he gets it for sure as well.
that's the one big thing that I think a lot of people don't realize when you talk about an organization that is considered, air quotes, national, is that being able to participate at your local slash regional level is something that becomes a little bit more tangible in this organization, in my opinion, and some of the connections that you make also give you back. I mean, I know that everyone's talking about the word volunteering, and that's always like giving away, but there's also a component of receiving back as well. And so I think that's something that shouldn't be overlooked either.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you really create like your own community of folks that care about deer and deer hunting in your region. And like, that's one of the things being a volunteer is always given back to me as a community of like-minded folks.
And I'll echo that too. That, and then also too, you know, this is a passion for all of us. Deer hunting, whitetail habitat restoration, that's all a passion for us. So to be able to volunteer and give back to that passion, and to know that the work that we're doing is going to benefit generations behind us, and you know, that in itself is the biggest reward, in my opinion, for me personally.
Yeah, it's not all about fundraising. And I think early on when we used to have this program, there was so much of an emphasis on fundraising that it would wear volunteers out, because they would put all of this time and energy into putting together their annual banquet, but not actually doing the mission work. And we have really flipped that lately. I mean, we obviously, fundraising is critically important. You all can talk about that. And also the fact that you get to keep a lot of money there locally to do projects that you want to do. But in my view, the mission work, the reason why people do this and get excited, will drive the fundraising, because you're passionate about the mission. You're doing great things on the ground. Fundraising just naturally happens whenever you do those things. And so there used to be a time when we required branches to do fundraising banquets. We don't do that anymore. We give you a lot of flexibility working with our folks here to come up with ways to raise money, but it's also, it has to be on the back of mission. So any of you want to just sort of jump in and just talk about the importance of doing the mission work?
So you hit the nail right on the head with the mission work. Most people get involved with something because they like the outcome of what you're doing. So with us at NDA, we tell folks, and Jason and Megan both will agree with me on this, that when we start talking with somebody about starting a new branch, the first question is, well, what do you want to do? Oh, like you said, the fundraising is going to take care of itself, but what are you passionate about? Are you passionate about policy, field to fork, mentored hunting, education, disease, whatever it may be? But the root of it is we want these local branches to be mission delivery and to be stewards of the mission for us. And like you said, we would get burned out from having to do these banquets and all this fundraising to then watch the money go away from where it was raised and be put to initiatives that really probably didn't affect people in that local area. But here at NDA, with and you mentioned, you know, the amount that stays there, we've got a 75-25 split on fundraising dollars. So a big chunk of fundraising dollars does stay local to help fund mission work from the local branches.
Yeah, and that 25% adds up rather quickly. And I think people take a lot of pride in doing a project locally with money that they raised. And also, that's a pretty significant chunk compared to a lot of conservation organizations, and some, by the way, leave zero locally. And so, not getting into naming names, but we're just, the reason I bring that up is just to say that we think it's important to leave that money locally. Jason, you look like you wanted to jump in there.
And like, it's super, that money gets done on the ground. Things happen in their local areas. I know branches that have adopted wildlife areas and do tons of habitat work on those wildlife areas. Branches do learn to hunt, field to fork events, like tons and tons, even like advocacy. I know like in Michigan, we have a state council that is very active. They do a ton of policy in that state to help promote deer and deer hunting following science. So like, that on the ground dollars is super important to spend. And I'm very proud that like those branches are able to take those funds and do those things.
So Megan, what's your pitch? Like someone calls you and says, hey, I'm kind of interested in NDA, but tell me more. Why should I get involved? I mean, what's your response to them typically?
So when somebody approaches me and they want to get involved in the NDA, my pitch is more so I ask questions. So I want to know what is important to them. What work do they want to do? What is the connection? Like, what spurred them to contact me? Usually somebody has a connection that they want to implement in their community. NDA has a lot of ways to connect what they want to do to what we need to do for mission work. So I always want to know what our individual volunteers are interested in and then make that work for all of us.
The challenges facing deer and deer hunting are being turned into a success story thanks to the National Deer Association and its partnership with Johnny Morris, Bass Pro Shops, and Cabela's. Through the first year of the Improving Access, Habitat, and Deer Hunting on Public Lands initiative, more than 300,000 acres of public land in six states have seen market improvements. These improvements, aided by funding from the Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's Outdoor Fund, include increased hunting access, improved wildlife habitat, and hunter recruitment. This is only the start, though, of this initiative's goal of impacting 1 million acres by 2026. These efforts will result in a lasting positive impact that will be felt by future generations of sportsmen and women. Yeah, I think that's critical. We don't want them to come in the door and then all of a sudden say, okay, here's all the reasons you came here, but now we want you to do all these things instead. So, but I'll also add too that it's important. We also don't want branches or individuals out there kind of running rogue and doing things that aren't with what we're trying to do at the national organization. And I know sometimes that's a big part of your job too, is sort of keeping people on the tracks. But, you know, there's another part of this too. You all had mentioned or used the words rewarding and pride and doing things locally. We recently gave out our volunteer awards, various categories, and we did those over Zoom, and I got to see some of the videos. Just any one of you can jump in on this, but talk about how moved our winners were whenever you told them they were getting these awards, because it moved me just to see it.
I think the way that we did it was fantastic. Jason and Megan and I sat down and talked about it, and we kind of duped our volunteers. Told them we had something that we needed to talk to them about, and it included Megan, Jason, and myself. And then we got them on the Zoom and were like, oh yeah, by the way, here, you know, you're our volunteer of the year, you're the branch of the year, and so on. And seeing the appreciation from our volunteers was, it was awesome. You know, nobody does this for anything other than to give back, but to recognize people and to pat them on the back and give them a sincere thank you, I mean, it was worth it. And I'm glad that we decided to record them, because some of the reactions were a little comical, to say the least.
Yeah. Like you were saying, Nick, I find it extremely moving when you like give folks those awards, because like these folks are giving their like time to the mission of NDA. Like, you know, you can donate time, treasure, or talents, and all of these folks are donating all of those things to the mission of NDA. And like that recognition to them is like, you know, it was hugely moving. It's hugely moving for me to be able to tell somebody, you are what we like think is the most amazing volunteer we have. Right? Like what you're doing on a day-to-day basis with your own time, that, you know, every one of us has busy lives, right? We have kids, we have jobs, we have all of those things. And these folks are taking their precious time to affect change and do good work in their regions. And it's super moving. I love working with those folks, and to be able to award them was fantastic.
If you're someone, the people that get these awards, by the way, frankly, all of our best volunteers are the ones that figured out, listen, it's not about how much I can take, it's about how much I can give. And so where we've had frustrations in the past with somewhere, it's typically with the ones that kind of come into this with the idea that, you know, what can I get out of this? Which is, that's part of it. Obviously you want to get something for the community, but it's not so much about the I. It's about, you know, what it's about the we, and it's about what can I give and not what can I take. And so I think that's the general spirit around our program and our volunteers. And I just wanted to bring that up. So if you're sitting there listening and it's like, you know, if it's, man, I could really stand to gain something from this. I think you're thinking about it the wrong way. I want you to be thinking about, what can I give to this great cause? What can I give to deer? What can I give to hunting and my local community when it comes to wildlife and wildlife habitat? And that's really what puts you on the road to getting awards and having a lot of success. But there's the other side of this too. And Jason, you mentioned time, other commitments. Let's say I'm someone that doesn't necessarily have the time to commit to being a steady volunteer, but I'd like to just simply attend an event. Where can folks go to learn about events that are going on around the country?
You can go to our website. Like, there's the find an event page on our website. There is a massive amount of stuff going on at any general point. We're getting much better over the last year of making sure every event, be it, you know, on the ground habitat work and mission work to banquets and fundraisers, where you can go have a good time and meet folks. You know, those fundraisers, they are a great way to like meet people in your community. I know one person who's sort of taking over a branch in Wisconsin. You know, he moved to that location like a year ago, and getting involved with a branch, he's meeting all these new people, and it's a super great way to build your community, right? So definitely go to the website, look at the find an event, the attend a event page, and you can see all the stuff that's going on in your local area and around the country.
Well, I'm going to jump in because I think that there is something that is important that we at least express, is that after listening to everybody talk about the main focus of a lot of the volunteerism, I want everyone to also realize, because there might be some people out there that just don't know what they want to participate in or what they might be good at. And I would strongly encourage you to still reach out and be comfortable saying, I'm not sure, but I'd like to at least be around it for a while, be involved in just in like an observatory type of capacity, and let me figure it out. And there's what we're telling you is that you can actually be more of I'm not saying this in a disparaging way, but like a passive participant initially, until you feel comfortable and find out where you can participate and then pursue that. So don't feel like that everyone's trying to get you to commit to a specific role. We're trying to get you to commit to just general participation and be part of the community.
You know, you don't have to even know what you want to do, but like, branches are doing stuff. They always need like help. And as the saying goes, many hands make light work, right? So the more volunteers, the more folks you have in your area that are like, that step forward and say, and raise their hand and say, I want to help. They don't have to necessarily know what they want to do, but there's always something the branch can help you do. Or you can just be a member. Being a member in itself, you can find out what's going on in your area. You can find out what's going on around the country and learn what you might want to be involved in.
Yeah, I'll just kind of dovetail off of that with what Jason said. Being involved doesn't mean that you're running a branch. Being involved is just being an active member. We send out newsletters weekly. We have a branch newsletter that goes out monthly. We do things to keep people up to date and involved, and, you know, to be involved is kind of left up to you, is how much, you know, how far do you put your toe in the water, or do you jump in head first? And that's left up to the individual. But there's things for people to do that aren't branch presidents, that are just members. There's call to action items that come out all the time that takes volunteers and it takes members to make things happen. You know, strength in numbers. So if you're passionate about deer and deer hunting, we need you as a member in the NDA.
Yeah, and I would say don't get caught up in, this happens a lot, where you see someone or that maybe it's a branch president and they want to set up an event and they're discouraged because only five people showed up. Well, that's going to happen. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not having success, because the next time you have an event, and this, when I say event, this literally can be, hey, let's get together at the local pub and just have a couple drinks and just hang out and talk deer hunting. It can literally be as simple as that, just keeping people engaged. And so maybe one time you have five people show up, and then you do it the next month and you might have five people show up, but three of those people were people that weren't at the last event. And so I think consistency, giving people consistent opportunity, is more important than worrying about, whether or not you sold the place out or whatever it is you did at that time. So, you know, Megan, do you hear that sometimes in your area where people are just, they don't feel like they're getting enough people to events or enough people engaged?
I do. And you know, that's something that branches are going to struggle through, and members are going, or leaders are going to struggle with, you know, if they're bringing up new branches or they're reestablishing branches or revitalizing branches, that's going to happen. But ultimately, volunteerism, whether with NDA or any other organization, is a life enriching experience. And it's not anything that somebody's doing to, it's not required. Like, you're not required to volunteer your time to anything, but we're doing this because sharing the experience of hunting, sharing the experience of conservation, these are rewarding things, doing things with like-minded people. So everybody starts somewhere, whether you're, you know, filling out banquet halls or you're getting three people to a pub night. It's about the connection. It's about building something. So it's important to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think what you don't want to do is only be heard from whenever you're like, hey, you haven't heard from me in 6 months, but let's go sell a ticket and raise money. And then people are going to say, okay, we'll raise money for what? People should have seen you three or four times, or maybe it's a habitat walk. We did one of those actually on my property last year for our branch. It was cool. And so those, you got to do those things on the regular before you ask somebody to also expend some capital on helping you raise dollars. Mike?
So I'd like to have the group or anyone from the group talk about the importance of being visible in your community as well, because I think that's a huge hurdle. And I think that kind of might shy specific or, you know, shy specific people away just because they don't know, well, I've never seen them out there. They're in my area, but what are they really doing? So someone talk about visibility, please.
So, yes, we kind of are revamping how we get our message out and how we market what we're doing, so to speak. A lot of our branches go and do work, and again, it's the nature of it that, you know, they do it because they're not looking for a pat on the back, they're not looking for the fanfare that goes with the work that they've done. So a lot of times you don't get to hear about it. Jason, Megan, and myself, when we're in contact with our local branches across our landscapes, the first question that I know that I ask is, hey, what have you done? Have you done something lately? Let's get it out there, because there's other people that want to do whatever it was that we just did, and let's get them involved as well. Being visible is a huge hurdle that I think we all face. You know, I don't want to walk around tooting my horn that I'm here doing all this work, because again, I'm not doing it for the pat on the back. I'm doing it because of what it does for me personally and the work that future generations get to see. But we are trying to change that and trying to get it out there, because also too, that helps us recruit new people and get more volunteers involved too. And it kind of goes back to the way that our branches are set up, where we want you to focus on mission delivery a lot more so than fundraising. So now we're not talking to you just one time a year when we're asking you to sell that ticket. We're talking to you, you know, every other week, once a month, whatever it is, because we're planning all these other things to go do. And by doing more of those, that also helps that visibility as well.
Yeah, and I know that's what one of Matt and Megan's and my jobs is, to help branches tell their story, what they're doing, right? So we're here for branches to say, hey, we've got this thing coming up, and we can send e-blasts and post things on social media and those sorts of things that will, you know, grow that local community, so a branch is more capable of getting more stuff done in their region, right? And you'll hear me say that all the time. Like, when it comes to like volunteerism, being a part of an organization like this, I'm very community driven, right? Like, we're building a community of folks that believe in the same things, that want to make change, and working with Matt and Megan and I to like get that story out, tell folks what's coming up, what has been done, will really grow that community in your area.
I was thinking about other ways too that people can volunteer. You don't even necessarily have to be really into habitat, for example. Maybe, and this was brought up earlier, maybe you're just interested in things like policy. So local state policy, federal policy that impacts deer and conservation. So we have some volunteers like that, don't we?
We do. We've got we actually have some policy point people across the landscape. I know we've got a few in South Carolina, Georgia, Louisiana. And again, we've got a great policy lady. Miss Catherine is doing a fantastic job, but she's only one person. So to have these volunteers that are interested in policy to help keep us up to date with what's going on in their state or even in their local community is vital. And they play a much more important role than I think we give them credit for at times.
Michigan, we have folks right now that are on the DMI, which is the Deer Management Initiative, where there's like study groups in the state talking about, policy changes to improve deer hunting here, control deer numbers in the southern state, and how to improve deer numbers in the Upper Peninsula. We have folks working on CWD stuff. Our member of the year, Kim, out in Wisconsin, he's very involved in CWD management discussions in Monroe County and outside as the state as a whole. I've had calls with DNR folks in Minnesota, with Minnesota members and branches. So it's a very big part of our organization. And like Nick can speak to this more, but that's one of the things that really got added on when it became NDA.
Yeah, and I was going to say, but when I interrupted you there, Jason, Matt brought up Catherine. Catherine Appling Pooler is our director of policy. And so if you're someone that's into policy, she's someone that you're going to meet very quickly. And I know that she is very interested in building a network across the country of people who are really just sort of state-based policy experts, because as much as we are aware of what's going on, I can tell you that there are things that go on very locally that we may not hear about before you hear about it. And we also don't always know exactly the nuances of a particular policy matter locally that you can help us understand so that we can help you with it. So that is another element. I want to go around to each of you with kind of a closing question here, and that is, what else do you want our listeners to know about being an NDA volunteer? And so you'll each get a chance to answer that, and I'm going to actually have Megan answer first, because she's been here the least amount of time, and I don't want you veterans here to take away all the good answers. So Megan, what is it that you would like potential volunteers to know about NDA?
What I would like potential volunteers to know about NDA is that there are so many different ways to be involved as a member or a leader or a branch volunteer. As many ways as you could think of it pertains to deer hunting, there are that many different ways that you can click in and be involved in our organization. So, contact us, reach out to us, let's discuss ways. There's so many different personalities, and there's always a way that you can contribute.
All right, Jason, you're next.
Yeah, I've been involved with volunteers for quite some time, and I will say that one thing that prevents folks from volunteering oftentimes is they don't feel qualified. Like, I'm not good enough to do this. I don't know how to do anything spectacular. Why would an organization want me? Your time is precious. That time helps no matter what. And believe me, you are qualified. You are very good at something. And even if you are not good at anything you can think of that might help us, believe me, you are. And we would love to have your time and talents to help move NDA forward and do really good work on the ground in your region.
All right, Matt, did they leave some meat on the bone for you, or did they take it all?
They didn't leave much, that's for sure. But I would tell somebody, get involved. We've got a slogan at NDA, United for Deer, and that's what we are. We are United for Deer. And our mission is really simple. We're ensuring the future of wild deer, wildlife habitat, and hunting. And if that does something to you and you've got a passion for that, get involved. The other part of it will come easy, but we need you to be a member to start with. And if you want to be involved, reach out to one of us. We'll be happy to have you as part of our branch system and to be plugged in with one of our committees. And again, we're all United for Deer in this.
So Nick, if I may, let's kind of wrap that in, because that's all good information. But the one thing we didn't talk about, we've been talking about becoming a member. Why don't you give a rundown of what membership at NDA looks like?
Sure. See how Mike just turned the tables on me there? That was a good move, man. No, that's important. Yeah, membership generally is, I think, is important to talk about. And then I have one more thought also on being an NDA volunteer. So just being a member, we have really revamped how we do membership. And we did that for a lot of reasons. One is the world has sort of changed in how people view memberships. There was a time back when the doctor and I were young, as the two much older people on this call, where getting that little plastic card from whatever you joined was like the big deal. That's what you wanted to do. And so you sent your, you know, $20 in and you got your membership card. People don't value that as much anymore. Now they value more the experience or other ways to be involved without sort of like feeling like that anchor of being a member and all that type of thing. So we have now a membership level that doesn't cost you anything. It's just our basic member. And you have to give us some things for that. You have to give us your email address and your home address so that we can reach you on policy. But it's just a way of saying, listen, I want to be engaged with you. I want to be on your list. I want to be part of it. I just don't care about the membership card part of it. Then we have the premium membership, which does, there is a fee for that. Right now, it's currently $35. You're going to get a whole bunch of discounts with our partners if you join at that level. So you do get something back. And you also get entered into a number of drawings throughout the year for free. You don't have to do anything but just be a premium member. You can participate in our seed sale, a whole bunch of other things. If you go to our website and click on join, you'll see what those paid benefits are. And then we also have our life membership, which has been quite popular lately because we're giving away, part of the life membership is a gun. And it's a bolt action Howell rifle that you can get in 308 or 6.5 Creedmoor with the NDA Life member logo engraved in the stock. That has been very popular, and you can do that option as well. And so if you're into deer, you're into habitat or conservation, we've pretty much left you no reason to not become a member of the NDA and then hopefully graduate into participating in a branch or being a volunteer, which is what our fine folks have talked to you about today. And the other point I wanted to make about that was that, you know, you don't even have to be a deer hunter to be involved with this organization, because we are a quote deer organization, but above all that, we're a conservation organization. And I look at some of our peers that attract members that don't necessarily participate in the activity. And I think very highly of them. So like Trout Unlimited, I'm a member of Trout Unlimited. I happen to be a fisherman and a fly fishing and all that, but people join Trout Unlimited because they care about freshwater conservation. And they may not even be a fly fisher or a person that fishes at all. That's great. Ducks Unlimited. People care about wetland habitat. And so because people care about wetlands, they join DU or they buy a duck stamp, even though they have no intention of shooting a duck. And that's what I want for this organization too. We do so much in terms of habitat that matters to all wildlife conservation, and the deer themselves are so valuable to the big picture of wildlife conservation. That's reason enough to join and be a member and volunteer of the National Deer Association. So end on that note. Hey, speaking of supporting the NDA, I'd be remiss if I don't remind people, because you're running out of time to participate in our Gear for Deer. I'm sorry, that was the last participation. Our United for Deer sweepstakes. And so there are just so many awesome packages. One of the things alone, there's a Kentucky Bull elk tag in there. I mean, that alone comes with extreme value. There's an Illinois deer hunt, a $10,000 gift card to Academy Sports. I mean, every one of us I know on this call could find a lot of things to do with that $10,000, buy a bunch of stuff we probably don't need, actually. A Tracker UTV from our friends at Bass Pro Shops, a no-till drill from PH Outdoors, and just a whole host of other prizes there. Go to deerassociation.com/UnitedForDeer or just Google it, United for Deer Sweepstakes, and get in before the end of the month, because that's going to end. And there is not a single prize as part of that that is not high end or fantastic. You can get in for as little as $20 a ticket. You can buy 3 for $50 or 10 for $100. That runs through April 30th. Don't miss out on that. That's going to be a wrap on this episode, friends. And I again want to thank our guests, Matt, Jason, and Megan, for their time this morning. Thanks for being on the show. Any last words that you want to offer?
Thank y'all. We appreciate you having us. And if you'd like to volunteer, reach out to one of us.